Good day. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail with Mark Amaru Pinkham. This program will explore the secrets behind the Knights Templar and other secret mysteries of the world today. Now, here's your host, Mark Amaru Pinkham.
Welcome to another edition of the Guardians of the Holy Grail, the program dedicated to diving deep to uncover and expose the truth behind the Knights Templar, secret societies, and the ancient Holy Grail mysteries. The Guardians of the Holy Grail was created by me to clear up many of the popular misconceptions that have been perpetrated in the mainstream media regarding the secret societies, the Holy Grail mysteries, the Knights Templar, and the bloodline from Jesus and Mary Magdalene. Through this show, I'm hoping to set the record straight with a lot of hard facts from authors and researchers, as well as with testimonials from current and past members of the Initiatic Societies. I, myself, am a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, which was founded to revive the mystical rites and wisdom of the original Knights Templar that, over the centuries, has either been lost or ignored. You can learn more about our Gnostic Temple organization and sign our mailing list by visiting our website, which is www.gnostictemplars.org. You can, while you're there, you can sign up our mailing list and receive our monthly e-news. You can sign up for the 18-lesson Gnostic Templar e-course. You can become an associate member. There's lots of videos to watch, books to buy. One of the books that is currently featured is my new book called World Gnosis, The Coming Gnostic Civilization. And this book chronologues the movement that has passed down through the Knights Templar and the secret societies, which is a movement to found a one-world civilization based on Gnostic spirituality. The movement to a one-world civilization actually began many thousands of years before the Knights Templar or before the Initiatic Society, and that's precisely where this book begins, and then it goes and then it ends actually with the description of the new Gnostic civilization that we are now moving into, what it will look like, different aspects of it. As I said, you can purchase a copy of that book at the web store on our website, and once again, that is www.gnostictemplars.org. Today, if you'd like to call in with a question for our guest, feel free to call in our toll-free number, which is 866-472-5795. Before we get into a discussion with today's guest, I'd like to mention the tour that I'll be leading in September. September 20th to the 30th, myself and my friend Nancy Safford, who's a high priestess of the Magdalene Mysteries and also a Knight Templar, we're going to be leading a pilgrimage down into the Languedoc region, which is a bastion of the mysteries of the goddess and has been for many thousands of years. And we believe that right now this area is actually bringing forth a lot of the mysteries and even hidden artifacts that have been stored down there for a couple thousand years in order to survive. Their revival is part of this planetary revival of the goddess tradition. So we're going to some of the very important sacred power spots down there in the Languedoc region of southern France, and also in northern Spain. We're going to be visiting Rennes-le-Château, which I'm sure a lot of you know. There was a chapel there that gave up a lot of secrets to a priest called Berenger Saunier. And one of those secrets apparently was the genealogy and descendants of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. Also, there is legends of there being a underground Solomon's Temple in the Languedoc, and there's various other legends. Most recently, a man named Ben Hammett discovered a cave there, which has a mummy, which he believes is the mummy of Mary Magdalene. So these kind of things are happening all the time there, and so we want to get in on some of that. We're going to have Ben speak to our group when we're down there, as well as Henry Lincoln, and most of you will know him as one of the writers of Holy Blood, Holy Grail. So we're going to Rennes-le-Château, Montsegur, the place of the Cathars, Montserrat, which is amazing place on a strong vortex where Templars did a lot of initiations, and there's a lot of legends about the Holy Grail being hidden there. St. Marie de la Mer, where Mary Magdalene and some of the other disciples of Jesus landed on the coast of France. We're going to be there on the equinox and on the full moon, and we're going to do a lot of ceremonies in order to connect with the goddess energy. So if this sounds interesting to you and you'd like to join us on this pilgrimage, please go to this website and read about the itinerary, and you can register if you like. The website is www.sacredsitesjourneys.com. Kind of run it together as one word, sacredsitesjourneys.com. Okay, now for today's show, we have a guest coming on, talking about the prophecies of the Hopi Indians of northern Arizona. And the Hopis have a lot of prophecies about these times we're living in, leading up to 2012 and afterwards. Our guest is John Kimmy. He's worked with a lot of the Hopi elders on the Hopi reservation. And one of his mentors was the keeper of the Hopi prophecy, Grandfather David Monongi. I'm not sure I'm saying that right, but anyway, he was apparently the main keeper of the Hopi prophecy for some time, and John studied with him, and since the passing of Grandfather David, John has been out spreading the Hopi prophecies around the world. And since that time, John's also written a book that contains some of the Hopi prophecies and a lot of the Hopi wisdom. His book is called Light on the Return Path, and you can get it on eBay or at Amazon.com. And John's website, if you want to learn more about him and his work, is www.dancingawakethefifthworld.com. Dancingawakethefifthworld.com. Okay, well, greetings, John. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail.
Well, thank you, and greetings from Colorado.
Okay. Well, let's get right into the Hopi prophecies, because there's a lot I want to talk about. It's a very, very fascinating subject, and especially right now. As I understand it, the Hopis maintain that we are now moving into what they call a fifth world, and each world is approximately 26,000 years in length. Is that right?
No, that's the larger cycle. Each of the worlds that has been identified through the various geophysical things that have happened, and also through all of the ancient oral histories, is about 5,200 year cycles.
Okay, so it corresponds with the Mayan prophecy, then?
Yes, it does, very much.
Okay, okay. Go ahead.
The difference between Hopi chronology in the Mayans is that the Mayans did most of their determination of cycles astrologically, and so they have documented and have the calendars, whereas Hopi doesn't have those. What it has is a chronology based upon the information given by Masa, the keeper of the fourth world, about 5,200 years ago at the emergence and beginning of the cycle of many, journeys that all of the ancestors took before they settled at Hopi, the migrations. And so, they carried this information, some of this information on their migrations, and then received the bulk of it when they completed their migrations, and that has been carried down through the clans up until the present time.
Well, I always think of the Hopis as having been where they are, or certainly in the Americas, a lot longer than 5,000 years ago. Is this true? Weren't they where they are now? I mean, much earlier than that, or?
Well, they're considered the elder nation of all the North American Indian nations, and even have been acknowledged by the Mayans that way. Yes, the Four Corners area is, has. If you just keep digging, you just keep finding civilizations and ancient artifacts. But this cycle, the Fourth World, was begun at what they call the emergence from the bottom of the Grand Canyon at a time when, after the floods, and when the world was very sparsely inhabited around there. And they were sent on migrations immediately, and when they returned from migration, they settled then where they are now in the three mesas of northern Arizona called Hopi Land.
So, in the third world, they talk about it, they give a scenario that sounds like they're talking about Atlantis in the third world, is that right?
Well, they don't talk about it that way. They have their own reference and points of reference, but there was a time when they had to survive the floods that, the story of the floods are all around the world, and every indigenous culture has their own story of that. And they say that the people who survived were the ones who were what the Hopis call one-hearted, in other words, in touch with the instructions of the Great Spirit, and were led in some cases to build crafts like Noah and the Ark, and in other cases to go underground. And the Hopis were instructed to go underground, and when they did, they established a way of life there for a period of time that eventually became corrupted, and the one-hearted people were forced to migrate back out of the ground and go on the migration that they went on in this fourth world.
So where would you say that they were living before they went underground?
Well, they went underground locally, so they must have been living on the surface near their present areas, because that was, where they had to survive.
So if they emerged out of Grand Canyon, then where they were living is theoretically under what is now Grand Canyon?
No, where they're living now is these three mesas.
I'm sorry. When they were living underground, right? Were they living under the Grand Canyon?
Yeah.
Because that was a place of emergence, right?
Yes, that's right.
So is there any sign, are there any tunnels or caves left over from where they were living under Grand Canyon?
Well, they say there are. I'm no expert on it, but, you know, they do say that that there was quite a habitation under there for a cycle. So that would be several thousand years, I guess.
Well, so we know the place of emergence, right? Hasn't that been located? So if we follow that straight down, we should be able to come across some tunnels or caves or whatever.
I would think, but that is the most sacred shrine to the Hopi people, and it's protected, and you can't just go in there and nose around.
I see. But as far as you know, they don't really talk too much about those caves or tunnels or anything?
No. Yeah. They hold a lot of their information very tightly because, of course, the history of the exploitation that they have suffered has taught them not to say too much.
Right. So their patron, their deity, Masao, he guided them to where they are now. Was there a special reason for this? Could it possibly be because it's going to be the safe area during these times?
Well, the area is called Tuonesavi. The whole Four Corners region, or the Colorado Plateau, is roughly a 350-mile radius to the Four Corners, and that area is considered the sacred center place, and there are four sacred mountains within that realm that are recognized and served as sacred places by not only the Hopis, but the Apaches and the Navajos and some of the other tribes in the region there. And it's called Tuonesavi, and it's a very unique area. The characteristics of it, the geophysical characteristics, have only one match on Earth, and that's directly through the middle of the Earth. It comes out at the Tibetan Plateau. And both the Tibetan Plateau and the Colorado Plateau have very similar geologic formations. In fact, the reason that the Chinese wanted to seize Tibet's land was because of the great amount of heavy ores that are in the Himalayas, and they are now mining uranium from there, and of course the largest uranium deposits in North America are in the Four Corners region as well. There's also higher frequency of lightning strikes in both of those areas, probably due to the heavy ores in the ground. And there's also very large aquifers at 1,000-plus feet down in both of those regions. So they're very, very similar. And, of course, the cultures that reside on the surface are, now that they have periodically met with each other and compared their lives and lifestyles, they find a tremendous amount of similarity. In fact, the two languages are extremely similar, and it makes it very hard for the interpreters. But it has been established that one of the things they talk about is the East and West Pole. Our scientists talk about the magnetic poles, but there's also a flow of energy from the East to the West, which is what the Tibetan people and the Hopi people call the spiritual poles, and that those spiritual poles are the actual poles themselves are in the Colorado Plateau and the Tibetan Plateau.
Well, I know that part of the prophecy is, if I'm correct, is involves the brothers, that one, the white brother, left at one point, and he was supposed to return. His color may have changed during the time he was gone, but he is going to return, I guess, during these times. And some people think that maybe it's a Tibetan, or maybe it's even the Dalai Lama. Is that right?
Oh, I'm sure there are various interpretations of it. One of the things I learned from the elders was not to get ahead of it and extrapolate before it actually happens, because we may be wrong. And so in keeping the prophecies, they have to keep them very purely, and they have done that in a non-literate way through very lengthy sessions that the elders used to have of repetition of the knowledge and checking each other to make sure that they got it right and didn't leave anything out. And in the old days when I was around there, they used to do that several times a year just to keep it fresh. And whenever I would ask questions like that, well, could that mean, they would say, that's not up to us to interpret until we're 99% sure it's happened.
Okay, so they have not at this point recognized any person or tribe or culture as being the returning white brother?
No, they haven't. That the returning white brother will validate the authenticity by bringing the fragment of the Fire Clan Stone tablet that is a migration tablet that was carried off by that white brother during the migrations.
And does this need to happen before we move into the fifth world?
Yes, it does. He is considered he's considered the Pahana or the purifier, and the purifier is the one that will signal the final timing of the what they call the final day of purification, which according to Grandfather will be a 24-hour period of time in which transformation will occur. And it was said that this fifth world energy that we are all feeling increasingly in this time we're in now will culminate at that time, and the rest of that energy will be given, granted to Earth, and that will be the new normal ambient condition from that time forward. They say that it'll be so powerful that anyone who has not already been on a spiritual path and been channeling spiritual energy won't be able to survive it.
And so this 24-hour period, is this when we can expect, some major cataclysms, wars, polar shifts? Have they talked about what we can expect during this?
Yes, you know, the whole purpose of the prophecy was to give instructions. You know, there's a difference between what we Western people call prophecy and true prophecy. You know, Nostradamus, they call a prophet, but he was a predictor compared to Native American prophecy, because Native American prophecy, every event that is described on this chronology is accompanied by an instruction of what to do at that time. So a lot of people who I meet with, I travel all over the world, say, well, aren't you just establishing the, you know, the conclusion of this, and things will go the way you project them? And I always tell them that no, actually each one of these instructions was to avert catastrophe. And some of these instructions were followed and got us through to this point. You must remember that the Hopi ceremonial cycle has never been broken, even in the invasion of the white man and the Catholic Church and all. They have maintained their ceremonial cycle intact for these thousands of years, and their belief is that if that is ever broken, then there will be catastrophe, because they're continually rebalancing and recalibrating on a spiritual level the balance of the world. And so their understanding now is that we have very little time to create the resolution that we need in order to avoid catastrophe. And that resolution is the resolution of all polarities. We have become so polarized in our way of life. Grandfather used to tell me I would live to see the day when up was down, good was bad, right was wrong. You know, we're in that time now where truth has taken a back seat to everybody's manipulations, and that the only true truth that we can recognize is going to be what resonates in our hearts, and that that must be our guide. And the polarities between the East and the West are some of the are the most important and profound separations at this point that need to be melded together in the form of Eastern philosophy and way of thinking and the Western way, and that's why so many Eastern teachers and Native American teachers came out in the 70s and the 80s and brought their teachings out from the confines of their own cultural context to anybody who would listen. And this was all prophesied. This is the second great shaking. And it said that there would be this opportunity to personalize these teachings and to balance those, speaking from the Western point of view, balance those with what we had been raised with in the way of principles and education, and begin to come to a synthesis of these and a resolution of these that we would live as our daily life. I personally am a practicing Buddhist as well as a Native American ceremonial leader and practitioner.
So are there any of these cataclysmic events that must occur? I mean, I've heard everything from a polar shift to a third world war. There's any of these that the Hopis say really must occur as we move into the fifth world?
Well, when I was with the elders back in the 70s and 80s, there was a kind of non-resolved interpretation of the third great shaking, which they said, some people said would be a third world war, and Grandfather David said, no, that isn't what it meant. And so, it's really up to us how we are going to enter this time of purification, this fifth world. And it's happening on a lot of levels already. We're seeing that a lot of people are reevaluating and rethinking their own inheritance and being able to avail themselves of information that has been presented from another point of view. And many people have integrated that and are living that. And as I travel around, I get to see that verification that when people ask me if I'm a pessimist or an optimist, I have to say through my own experience and what I have seen, for instance, the quality of people who are attracted to hear the Hopi prophecy, so many of their stories are similar to my own. And I really get to see that that spirit is very much at work in trying to create this resolution. And each one of us has to work from the inside out and create resolution that we may have inherited information that at this point is just confusing. But the Hopi elders, one Thomas Bangyakya, who is an elder that I worked with and was the spokesperson for the traditional elders, he created a statement that I think is very important for us, and it really kind of condenses the instruction for this time and very well. And I'll read that. You've been telling the people that this is the 11th hour. Now you must go back and tell the people this is the hour and there are things to be considered. Where are you living?
What are you doing? What are your relationships? Are you in right relation? Where is your garden? Know your garden. It is time to speak your truth. Create your community and be good to each other. Do not look outside yourselves for the leader. This could be a good time. There is a river flowing now, very fast. It is so great and fast that there are those who will be afraid. They will hold on to the shore. They'll feel that they are being torn apart and they will suffer greatly. Know that the river has its destination. The elders say that we must let go of the shore, push off into the middle of the river, keep our eyes open and our heads above water. See who's in there with you and celebrate. At this time, we are to take nothing personally, least of all ourselves. For the moment that we do, our spiritual growth comes to a halt. The time of the lone wolf is over. Gather yourselves. Banish the word struggle from your attitude and your vocabulary. All that we do now must be done in a sacred manner and in celebration. We are the ones we've been waiting for. So I think
I think that sums it up very well, and thank you for that. I just had a couple questions about it. We're all in a intense flowing river right now. I mean, is this kind of a metaphor for the intensity and changes and transformations that are happening in everyone's lives right now?
Yes, definitely. You know, as we think about the fifth world energy streaming in at this time, whether you call it photons or, you know, there's a lot of various explanations for the effects we're feeling right now, that is the river. And it has a destination, and we're to release all of our old preconceived concepts and our attachments to the old way, in order for us to push off into the middle of the river. And it says it has its destination, and it's clear that we may not be, you know, that knowledgeable about where it's going, but it is the only game in town. It is where we are evolving.
Well, it also says the time of the lone wolf is over, and that we need to kind of join together. In what way should we join together? In movements that are dedicated to uplifting the world, or coming together in communities where, you know, there's a constant exchange of energy. People are really helping and assisting everybody and are connecting with each other. And in what way, you know, should we be coming together now?
Well, from what I get feedback from people who are very psychic is that collective consciousness is overtaking the individuation consciousness, and that we are all becoming members of something. And how we define that membership, all we really have to do is look around and see who's in there with us, you know, as it says in there. I do a workshop after every prophecy delivery, and I'll be doing one at the Prophets Conference in Vancouver on the 27th of July. What I do is I try and get people to see that that particular group of people has already been defined through two decisions that everybody there has made. One is to go to the Hopi prophecy, and the other is to come to the workshop. And out of that is a refinement of people who are pretty much one-hearted and are ready for the next step, which is to collectivize and to do so spiritually. So I teach them some ceremonies and exercises that they can do as a collective to begin to develop that consciousness. And there's various things that these groups have done as a result, which have proven to me the validity of the instruction. I personally am involved in the creation of a rural community here in Colorado on 1,000 acres of land, and we have a core community and many coming in now to join this, and it's all being facilitated very graciously by Spirit. We're all a little overwhelmed at how fast it's coming together, but I think this is, you know, happening wherever people of good conscience are beginning to come together. You know, here in our Western society, we were raised to compete. We were raised to try and excel from everybody else and to be a little bit bigger and better or richer and better looking or whatever it is to keep us apart. And that's the old stuff at the edge of the river. That's what we have to release. We have to get rid of that old paradigm in order to be able to embrace the idea of being a member of something greater. And that's where our real work is, and that's where nature is insisting that we go on our evolutionary journey.
Well, are the Hopis, are they encouraging people to move to certain areas that might be safer, to gather up a year or two worth of food and supplies in order to survive the earth changes? Are they giving these kind of instructions at this point?
Oh, yes. Yes. They're not specific instructions on where to go, because what they say is if you truly attain your one-heartedness and listen to your instructions, you will be instructed where your particular place is. And, you know, that's all based on not knowing exactly what the final day of purification is going to bring. You know, if we said, oh, well, it's going to be a flood, so you all ought to head for the hills, high mountains, that would be one thing. But we have so many environmental catastrophes at the edge, we're at the edge of today, we don't know which one would get us. That's not the point. The point is to be in a frame of heart and mind to be in balance with nature, so that as nature makes this shift, we also make it with her. You know, they just recently discovered that the resonant frequency, they've now measured the resonant frequencies of all kinds of matter, and they find that the one that is Mother Earth's resonant frequency, the only critter that they have measured that has the identical one is human beings. And so we are very much a part of her change. And it's very important for us to embrace her and to become familiar with her through direct connection. Get out of your houses, get out of your cars, get out and camp, hike, explore, do ceremony, and commune with her, because we are her children, and she's expecting us to join her in the fifth world.
Well, of course, the Mayans talk about December 21st, 2012 is being kind of the cutoff point in the very beginning of the new era. Are the Hopis talking about this day of purification happening before that day, or could it happen after that day?
Before or after or on, the elders that I have consulted with about that particular date say, that seems to be in the same region as their own projections, but they don't have a calendar, so they don't have a specific date.
There's also the prophecy, from what I understand, is that that there's going to be an appearance of what they call the blue star Kachina, and that will also tend to herald the fifth world. Is that right?
Yes. That's right. And there have actually been stars of all three sacred colors previous that have marked specific events in their prophecy back through time. And the last one would be the blue one. And when Hale-Bopp happened, I ran out and asked the elders if that was it, and they said, well, we're not going to say empirically yet that it is. There's more indications that have to verify that that we haven't seen yet. But definitely they have this understanding that there will be a formal closing of the relationship between the Kachinas and the people, and that will be celebrated by the Blue Star Kachina dancing in the plaza and removing his mask. And that will be the signal of the final, communion between those two entities, human beings and the supernatural beings of nature, closing this cycle so that when the new cycle opens, there will be a newly and much deeper and more effective relationship between the supernatural and the natural.
I cover this
quite a bit in my, you mentioned my book, Light on the Return Path, but I have a new trilogy that I've published, and much of this is covered in there. It's called the Jack Hopper Trilogy, and I have a website, www.jackhopper.com, where that can be ordered. It's actually a 6-hour oral history or oral story. I wanted to honor the oral tradition, and so I made it into an audiobook. And Jack Hopper is the main character, and he is a coyote who has gathered together a brotherhood of a coyote, an eagle, a horse, and a boy. And they kind of go through the progression from in the near future when earth changes will be more severe, right through the time of purification, and the third book is Jack Hopper in the third, in the fifth world, which will give you a little extrapolation about what we might anticipate the fifth world will be like. And that isn't just through my imagination, but through many years of discussion of these things with the elders that I worked with. And in those days, they were getting a lot of revelations through their dreams, and they were sharing those with me. So I tried to capture some of those so that people would have an idea. You know, we're also anticipating that the worst is going to happen at this time, that we really haven't even accessed through our own spiritual abilities visions of what the fifth world will be like, and I wanted to provide mine, so I really highly recommend it for people. JackHopperTrilogy.com.
Yeah, that sounds like that could be a real help for a lot of people right now to understand the change into the new era. That's what you mentioned about the elders having visions about the new era. Sounds quite interesting. What can you give me a sense of what these visions are about? What does the fifth world look like?
Well, for one thing, we will be in psychic communication with all of nature, so that everything from the smallest microbial life in the soils to the water and the weather cycles and all living things will have an opportunity to what I call communicate. You know, this word communication has become the watchword of our time here. But in the fifth world, we'll communicate. In other words, through heart-to-heart communion, we will be able to create coherent communication. And so a lot of things will happen. They say that we will be able to control gravity, so we will be able to fly, that we will be able to project our ESP, as you will, very much like the internet today. I call it the inner net. And that we will have a whole spectrum of relationships that will be quite liberating from the kind of established relationships that we were all taught to achieve with other people. And creation, we will be co-creators. So if you're standing in a desert area and you're getting thirsty, you can create a spring. These kind of things will be empowered to do these things in the fifth world, yeah.
And you've written about these in your trilogy?
Yes.
Do the elders talk about us becoming more of a galactic humanity, connecting up more with our space brothers and sisters in the fifth world?
Yes, what they say is that the space brothers that they have already established ships with instruct them that until we reach this higher level of consciousness, we can't have direct communication with them, and that won't be long before that changes to the point where we can have direct communication.
Do they speak about the extraterrestrials as being present now and assisting us in any way to make it into the fifth world?
Well, they don't talk about it much. There was an event that happened out at Hauteville one time when a white man said that he knew how to call in flying saucers, and he wanted to come out to Hopi and do it with the Hopi elders, and the Hopi elders went with him, and he didn't call them down, but there were some sighted at that time. But the white man had called a reporter from the newspaper in, I think it was Gallup, and so they made a big deal of it and did an article on it, which embarrassed the Hopis very much, and many of the Hopis were kind of admonishing the other elders for doing such a thing publicly. So it's kind of a stigma. They don't talk much about the extraterrestrials, but, you know, among themselves, they have their own deep conversations, I'm sure.
Well, at one point, some of the Hopi elders visited the United Nations and then spoke to the assembly of representatives there, and I guess gave them some predictions about the future and what they can do now to help themselves get through it.
As a matter of fact, that's one of the instructions that they had to do, to go to the House of Micah on the eastern shore where the nations of the world would be represented, and they must give their warnings and prophecies to that body. And they tried five times, finally succeeding in the form of Thomas Bongyakya being able to address the General Assembly in the year of the indigenous people. And he fulfilled that particular part of the prophecy instructions. Not much came of it. We're hoping that that Hopi land would be protected from all of the interests that want to, you know, change the tradition or kill the tradition, like the Mormon Church and the Peabody Coal Company and the the United States government. And when I was working out there with the elders, these were all of their adversaries, and so they called on some of us who had some abilities to communicate. I was a secretary for the traditional elders for a period of about 6 years, in which I helped them communicate with the leadership of the world, appealing for preservation of this tradition. And of course, nothing has really happened in that way. So they're still facing all of these issues that things like exploiting the land and mining for uranium under their Hopi land, and coal mine and things like this has been a constant challenge to the leadership out at Hopi.
Well, it sounds to me, John, that this day and night of purification could be quite a monumental time period. Do the Hopis have any plans of going out into the world and alerting the nations as they did at the United Nations about this coming day of purification?
Well, in 1946, they met there was an event that took place that was called the Spilling of the Gourd of Ashes. They said that there would be two-hearted people who would devise an instrument of terror, and they would try and control the world with that instrument, and it would be a gourd of ashes that, when spilled upon the earth, would boil the seas and on the land would create conditions where nothing would grow there for a long time. The ash itself would be poisonous and would, if ingested, would make people ill and kill people. And for pregnant women, it would bring about stillbirth babies. And so when the final bombing of Hiroshima happened, they realized that the Gourd of Ashes had in fact happened, and that was the mark of the beginning of the time of purification. And at that time, one of their instructions was to gather together all the Hopi, the clan versions of all of the Hopi nation, and share them with each other, because they'd been held hermetically up until that time, and then to synthesize that and edit it down to a three-hour oral delivery that they could then offer to the world. And at the time that I met Grandfather David, he was traveling all over the country and other parts of the world and delivering this message. And so he asked me to assist him, and over a period of 15 years I did such, and then he became unable physically to respond to requests to hear the prophecy, and he tested me and made sure that I got it right, and then he asked me if I would continue to respond to requests to hear it. And so that's how I happened to have traveled so extensively with this information and shared it with many indigenous peoples and other peoples and throughout the world. But then that opportunity closed when the elders passed away. And he told me, he said, you know, it would be a lot easier if you were a Hopi to continue this, but all of my young people have been out in the white man's world learning those ways instead of learning this information, and you're one that has constantly been attuned to this, and I have to ask you if you would continue to do this work. And so that's how I happen to be, you know, blood-wise a non-Indian that is carrying on this work.
This prediction, prophecy of the day of purification is actually kind of new to me. I think this is the first time I've heard it. So do you have any plans to try to get this information out more to the masses right now so they can prepare?
Well, the interesting thing is that I have a set of instructions in how I am to proceed with this, and it's very much in the old tradition of presenting medicine, of carrying medicine and presenting it. And in the old way, a medicine man didn't go out and advertise and say, you know, I can cure you, come to me. And they didn't charge for it. But they had to wait until they were approached and asked. And so it's in that tradition that I offer this up. I also am not allowed to record it or have others record it because of the aspect of it has never been charged for, that it has to be available to whoever spirit brings. And so I can't actually, you know, distribute it on a mass scale, which is a great limitation in these times, but I also find great wisdom in this instruction, in that if I do my job in letting people know when and where I'm going to do this, that spirit brings the right people to it who are open to it and can actually use it as part of their guidance for the rest of their lives. And so in that way, I feel very honored to be able to carry this message and see the transformations that do occur in people's lives.
Well, could you say briefly right now what you would recommend is the best course of action all of us can take in order to be ready for this day of purification?
Well, I can probably say it, but not as eloquently as the Hopi Elder statement I just read, which really says it well, you know. It says, where are you living, you know, and you've got to really go to your heart and your spirit to find out if this is the place where you want to finish this cycle. And what are you doing? What are your priorities? Putting your energy, you know, are you being creative or are you being reactionary? You know, the idea of, well, I got to keep this job to pay the bills, to keep the house, to this and that, is really pretty reactionary, not very creative. And that's always the choice whenever we get to a place of choice, is we can either be reactionary or creative. And at this time, we are to exercise our creativity and our visionary quality as much as possible. I would say the most important thing we can do is practice our spirituality. If you have a spiritual discipline that you have been taught, practice. Spend as much time in that level of consciousness as you can. Don't just walk around with beads around your neck saying, I'm a Buddhist, and you never sit down and meditate. You know, you've got to really practice these things if you're going to develop that level of consciousness that is the survivor. And the old way being an impediment now to our growth and our evolution. I got four things one time in a dream that I have been sharing with people because it works well for me. And the four things are: wake up, pay attention, listen to your instructions, and act on them immediately. And we're all being given those instructions, but we got to get to that level of mind where we can receive them, where we can understand them. So practice is what I say. The other thing I wanted to mention is that since, Mark, you were doing a pilgrimage this year, too, of the same month that I am, that I'm going to be leading a pilgrimage with the help of the Prophets Conference between the 9th of September and the 18th of September, crossing Tuonesavi, the Colorado Plateau, in a sacred manner. We will begin our pilgrimage at the Grand Canyon, the place of emergence, and then we will be going to some very special places where I have been led to continue the pilgrimage and the prayers and the offerings over a period of 9 days, and we will finish in Santa Fe on the 18th. And so I highly recommend, if anybody wants to get out there and relate to Mother Earth and these special places where she has so much information for us, to come and join us, because it's a opportunity. You know, you can say, oh yeah, I've been to the Four Corners before, but if you were there as a tourist, it certainly is different than being there as a pilgrim. And in the pilgrimage, you're open to being given your guidance and acting upon that spontaneously. So you're not looking at your schedule and saying, well, I can't afford to stay here or whatever. It's quite open-ended, and it's should be quite cosmic, and I really hope you will consider coming.
Yeah, that sounds fabulous, John. If people would like to keep abreast with your work and your tours and conferences, is all that information posted on your website, dancingawakethefifthworld.com?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And my own email address is on there if anybody wants to get a hold of me that way.
Excellent. Do you have any plans of doing anything in Sedona in the near future?
Well, actually, we're going to have an overnight in Sedona as part of this trip. And we'll be going from Sedona to Hopi Land, and I'll be delivering the prophecy in Hopi Land at the Prophecy Rock there the day after our Sedona visit.
Mm. Well, it sounds like a fabulous pilgrimage, and if I wasn't just going to be going to France and leading a tour when I am planned to now, I'd be more interested. But for those that aren't doing something right away afterwards, it sounds like a really great thing to take advantage of right now, especially.
Yeah, and to get that information, just go to www.greatmystery.com, and there's a link there for the Southwestern Pilgrimage, so you can find out about it that way.
Okay, great. Well. Well, thanks so much for being with us today, John. You've really opened a lot of eyes. You opened my eyes and told me a number of things that I didn't know about, and I'm certainly glad that I do know about them now.
Well, I'm glad we made contact, because your information on your website I'm quite interested in, too, so I'm going to become a student of all that now.
Okay. Excellent, excellent. Well, it's so wonderful that we can share and trade off information and wisdom right now. That's I believe that's the coming together and helping each other, as the Hopis are instructing us to do. So
yeah, as long as we remember that cyber relationships and physical relationships are very different, and that when we get a chance to meet eye to eye and heart to heart with people, that we shouldn't overlook the importance of that.
I'm totally right there with you, John. Well, thank you. Thank you so much again. And if you want to be in touch with me, please do. And
I will.
Excellent, excellent. Well, again, thank you so much for being on the show today, John, and sharing your really profound wisdom with us.
Well, thank you, Mark, and thanks for the good work you do.
And thank you for the work you do, John.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, bye for now. So next week, everybody, we have on our show, we have the Grand Master of the Order of Baphomet, and that is very much connected to the Knights Templar. If you've studied the Knight Templar legends, you know that Baphomet is a name, a mantra, a title that's floated around and been associated with the head of John the Baptist, the image of the goat of Mendes. And so we're gonna talk to Grand Master David DePaul about his order, the origins of it, and exactly what he's doing within that order today. So that'll be next Thursday, and the following Thursday after that, we've got Tracy Twyman, who is a great researcher, and she's done a lot of research in regards to the Merovingians and the sacred bloodline, and so we're going to be talking to her on that following Thursday. So we've got a couple of good shows lined up in the coming 2 weeks. Okay, well, thanks again all for, showing up today, and have a wonderful week. And always remember that the Holy Grail, the true Holy Grail, exists right within your own heart, and go there and find it. Bye for now.